The Innovate 608 podcast is brought to you by Starting Block Madison and sponsored by the Wisconsin State Journal, Madison.com, and the American Family Insurance Institute for Corporate and Social Impact. The Institute invests in visionary entrepreneurs who are building scalable social enterprises, offering economic opportunity for all, healthy youth development, learning, and academic achievement, and resilient communities. From the Starting Block Madison studio in the beautiful Capital East neighborhood of downtown Madison, Wisconsin, this is the Innovate 608 podcast, and I am your host, Nora Rowan Schmidt. Today on the show, we have Jack Salzwedel, Chair and CEO of American Family Insurance. A native of DeForest, Wisconsin, Jack began his career with American Family in 1983 as a claim adjuster. In 1985, he followed in the footsteps of his father and became an agent for the company. Jack then took sales and product line leadership roles at American Family, leading up to his election as chairman and chief executive officer in 2011. In his current role, Jack oversees the American Family enterprise of companies, which includes the American Family brand and subsidiaries, Connect, HomeSite, The General, and Main Street America. The company has expanded its commitment to community, establishing a corporate foundation in 2015, the American Family Institute for Corporate and Social Impact in 2018, and hosting one of the top PGA Champions Tour golf tournaments that raised more than $10 million for charity in its five-year history and delivered more than $70 million in local economic impact. In 2021, American Family announced its Free to Dream initiative, a $105 million commitment to addressing equity gaps in the U.S. Jack, thank you so much for being here today.
Great to be here, Nora. Thank you.
Let's talk about leadership. Was that always the path for you, or was it something that you kind of...
Stumbled into?
Stumbled into.
No, I would say it's not anything that I thought early on would be a role that I would have as a career. I think when I was in high school, I did a lot of things that I should not have done. and even when I went to college, I was not a great student. And as I look back, I think I wasted a number of years. But I do think in that time period, there was some growing that was going on, some maturing in my inner soul. And it led me to really evaluate, personal things of who I am, what I wanted to be, and what I wanted to try and become. And that then kind of led me down the path of more self-learning, trying to find things that were interesting to me, that that I had a lot of passion around. And that led me to things like leadership. And as I got involved in my career, in particular with American Family, I found the opportunities just were wide open for me, and I never actually said, "Hey, I want to be CEO of the company" or anything like that. But I always, every job I took, I wanted to be really good at it, and I wanted to be helping people, and I wanted to be making a difference. And innovation was a part of every job I had at American Family. And so it's not just the startup community or being an entrepreneur that gives you that innovation mindset. I think there's a lot of things you can do in a Fortune 500 company to try and move you in that direction as well. So I'd say it was a leadership became an acquired taste for me, if anything.
I love that. So the Spark Building and Starting Block, we're sitting at Starting Block right now in the studio. Eliminating barriers for entrepreneurs, creating opportunities for creativity and innovation. You know, this project is definitely something that you were absolutely instrumental in, and it's making a tremendous difference, not only in the Madison ecosystem, but the state ecosystem, and the lives of creative, innovative people. Talk to me a little bit about this project. What does it mean to you?
Well, it's great to see where it is today, and I have the scars to show how it got to where it is today. I mean, it started with us having a corporate development arm inside American Family and thinking about innovation, thinking about entrepreneurship, we opened a lab down on Block 100 on State Street, which housed originally our team that was working with innovation, and then we wanted something bigger, and so we started thinking about a building that's a physical space for people to be able to come and use, and an ecosystem within that building to be able to share ideas. But bigger than that, almost a statement to the company, to the workforce that we have, that innovation is here to stay, that it's part of our moral fiber at American Family. It's the connective tissue that aligns what we call our mainstream business and our new stream business. And so the physical building is important for all the things that it does for Starting Block, Generator, things like that. But it's really important to American Family in terms of the commitment to innovation and how it intersects with all the things that we do internally as well. So it was a very difficult project. We had a lot of wrangling with the city, and a lot of iterations, but like good innovation, you know, we did a lot of A/B testing. We did a lot of certain things not working, go back to the drawing board, rework it, find a path that makes it happen. And so where we are today is just great. And, you know, it houses things like and it has housed things like our Institute for Corporate and Social Impact. You talked a little bit about that earlier before we got on the air here, and what an important role that institute plays at American Family. It's housed our charitable foundations in the past, our business development area, our data science and analytics lab. So all of these things are new to American Family over the last 7, 8, 9 years. And the Spark Building is just a perfect physical building for those different disciplines to be operating in and providing that intersection between our mainstream and our new stream businesses.
You have always been a champion of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Can you talk a little bit about why the DE&I space is so important, and what does it mean to American Family and also to you personally?
Yeah, I think diversity, equity, inclusion, justice issues today certainly got highlighted, and we saw so much come out of last year with the George Floyd situation. But really before that, American Family has been at the forefront of thinking about diversity, equity, inclusion, justice issues. And it goes back a long way. It's part of who we are as a mutual company. But American Family had some issues back in the 80s with a redlining lawsuit in Milwaukee. And I came in as a new district sales manager in Milwaukee at a time, 1988, at a time where American Family had been sued by the American Civil Liberties Union, by some private plaintiffs, by the federal government, and for a redlining lawsuit. And as part of that, we signed a consent decree in 1995 that upheld American Family to do certain things. And right at that time that we signed the consent decree, I took on a new role as a sales director in Milwaukee. So it was my job to live this decree that that American Family had signed. It was a 5-year decree. So from 1995 to 2000, I worked in the central city trying to build offices, agent offices, claim offices, trying to provide product pricing to be able to give affordable and accessible insurance to folks in the central city. And as part of that, I learned that the folks on the other side of the table from the lawsuit were really not on the other side of the table. I've said this before, the table I found to be circular, and that we were really on the same side trying to do similar things. And I think that consent decree for me was a stake in the ground around issues of diversity and just actually justice, fairness in the workplace, in your community, how you work with your communities. And so that was kind of the beginning of my thought process around how concepts like diversity can strengthen an organization, can strengthen a community, but can strengthen an organization, and how you can set strategy around and including diversity to make your company stronger at the end of the day. And I think we've shown that our organization is stronger because of the diverse nature of our workforce, and we're not always, you know, where we want to be, but the inclusionary nature of our workforce and how we try to do things fairly. And so I think that that situation in Milwaukee was probably key for me in developing a mindset around diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice issues.
American Family believes in building strong communities, and there are numerous examples of American Family's dedication to community and the people in the communities that they serve. What are some highlights for you in your time as CEO, or some projects that you're most proud of?
Well, I think one of them, which is really visible, is the Dreams Foundation that we set up, the American Family Steve Stricker Foundation, which is a charitable foundation as well. Both of those foundations give millions of dollars per year to worthy charities, many of which are in the Wisconsin area, and some are national organizations as well. I'd say that's really, really an important legacy for me as I think about that, the giving back to the communities in that way, and to the organizations in the communities is just incredible what we've been able to do. But I also think some of the things that we've done with our workforce and our agents, how we've supported our agents to do more things in their local communities, funding that we've provided for agents to take that down to the local level and themselves be leaders in their communities are incredibly important to us as well. We've done some very visible things like put our name on a ballpark down in Milwaukee, so American Family Field, the American Family Amphitheater, which is in Summerfest, and we sponsor and are the naming sponsor of Summerfest as well. So we've done some very high-profile things like that, some sports marketing, like putting our name on the uniform of Atlanta United for the Major League Soccer team in Atlanta. So we've done a lot of things like that, which I think, as I look at it, provides great service to our communities, and also strengthens our brand in those areas as well. So I'd say those, along with things like Spark, where you think about the impact that this has differently, but the impact that it has on our communities as well, as we try to help the ecosystem of entrepreneurs, innovation, a job creation, and all of that, and what that does for communities. I'd say those are the things that just come to mind for me.
What has the last year or so been like for you? How has COVID and some of the problem solving related to COVID changed you and changed the way that work happens?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm sure you're seeing it, with the folks.
Absolutely.
With the folks you deal with here at Spark as well. And I'd say that it's been quite a year, hasn't it? And we've dealt with a health crisis. We've dealt with early on, in particular, an economic crisis that I think we got through fairly quickly. But I think we're going to be seeing the later stages of that with some of the things we're dealing with right now, some supply chain issues and unemployment issues, and I think inflationary issues coming, the race crisis that was simmering in the middle of last year, which we've all been concerned about and are thinking about, and then really the void of leadership at companies, organizations, politically, just a real divide in terms of leaders. Leaders not being able to bring people together, as opposed to dividing people, and so it's been a real challenging year. And I know folks in our workforce are now slowly starting to come back to the office environment, in a lot of cases in a hybrid fashion. But I sense with folks even coming back that there's a trepidation that they have as they come back. You know, how are my kids going to deal with daycare now? How are my kids going to deal with school where they have to wear masks? You know, what if somebody gets sick at school? Am I able to go get them? Or is the child care that I have, you know, going to be safe? So all of those types of issues all kind of add on to the pressure that was normal in the workplace 2 years ago. And there was pressure in the workplace 2 years ago as well, pressure to perform, pressure to excel, all the types of things that we feel when we go into work, pressure to help our fellow workers. All those things are still there, but there's this added layer of kind of COVID stresses that come to play. And so, you know, as I think about the next phase for leaders at American Family, I'm retiring at the end of this year from the CEO position, so Bill Westreight will be moving into that role. As I think about Bill and the challenges that he's got all the things that I had, you know, growing the business profitably, making sure that the culture stays right. He's got all those types of things that I had, but he's got this added layer of a changing workforce, of corporate real estate, and now the new things that come on top in terms of the societal issues that are clearly dividing sections of our population. And I just think it's going to be a really challenging time over the next few years as we work our way through this and find our way to that new normal, which I think we will get to, but I think it'll be very different than maybe the normal I had as I was growing up in the organization. So COVID, and then at the same time, I think there's been some really awesome things that have come out of the last year. This idea of forced innovation, where we had talked about going remote as a workforce for a long, long time and had taken incremental steps to kind of get ready for that. But when you have forced innovation where you have to do it tomorrow, we went entirely remote within 10 days. And so all these rules that we had in place that we thought we needed to have to go remote, you have to have a quiet area, you can't have pets around, you can't have kids around, you can't this, you can't that, you know, get thrown out the window. Which typically happens in innovation, right? You find new ways to do things. And we found out that actually those things are not that critical, that there's a lot of things that we thought we needed to have in order to go remote that we really didn't need to have. And so we not only got there, but we got the highest customer satisfaction, customer retention levels that we've ever had in the history of the company. So we not only got there quickly and did it differently, we did it in a way that was really successful as well.
What's the best advice that you've ever received?
Best advice.
Professionally or otherwise?
Yeah. Well, there's a few. One of them was from my father-in-law whose basic advice was get involved. I mean, get yourself in the mix of things. Don't shy away. Because maybe you don't know as much as other people, but just get yourself involved and believe in institutions. You know, believe that tomorrow is going to be better today than today, and that you can have a piece in making tomorrow better than today. I'd say that's a key. Darnell Moore, who was a mentor of mine and who brought me in as an officer of the organization very early, was critiquing me about my ability to find my voice or lack of ability to find my voice, and was always talking to me about finding my voice, finding those things that were central to me, and then holding myself accountable to those types of things. And I think those, both the getting involved and finding your voice, are a couple things that were given to me by mentors, and I think they're both really good. I found them to be really good advice. And then the last thing that Dave Anderson, my predecessor, harped on all the time was having a personal standard that's higher than what you expect of other people. So if you expect a lot from other people, expect more from yourself. If you expect other people to work long hours, you need to work longer hours. They might outsmart you, but they're not going to outwork you. And so that idea of holding yourself accountable, holding yourself to a higher standard than you hold others, is advice that I received from a mentor as well.
I saw a speech that you gave that mentioned constructive dissatisfaction, and I was I found that really compelling. Can you tell me more about what that means and why it's important?
Yeah, so I mean that's a term that I didn't come up with, but in the course of kind of looking at what American Family has been through over the last number of years and thinking about my leadership journey, I stumbled across this term that I thought really, really described what I am seeing at American Family right now, what I think what I exhibit as a leader, and what I see from other leaders at American Family, and that's this consistent and constant gnawing in the back of your mind about things that aren't quite right. It's an innovator's mindset, really, where you see something and it's working well, but you think it can be working better and a little bit different. And it's not a dissatisfaction where you're pessimistic or you're always running around, kicking your chin around, but it's a constructive dissatisfaction where you want to take what you see and make it better, and you want to try to get people around you to help make it better. And I think that concept of continually finding issues and dealing with them and not putting them back down and not allowing them to continue, but when you see an issue, when you see a problem, you address it. You become dissatisfied with it, and you figure out a way to be constructive in how you shift that. Is what I see going on at American Family. You know, we're a Fortune 300 company. In a lot of ways, we operate in a lot of areas like a startup, where people are required to find things that aren't going right and figure out new innovative ways to handle those. And part of our challenge as a large company is to create that mindset, whether it's lean thinking, lean startup thinking. You know, Eric Ries's book is one that we've really bought into. But I just think constructive dissatisfaction is a term that really describes pretty well the path that we've been on at American Family and how we manage our way through it.
You use social media fairly regularly to talk about things that you're doing, talk about things that American Family is doing, things that you support. You've got a blog. You have a very active Twitter feed, and I see you on LinkedIn all the time. Talk to me about your use of social media and how you've found it to be an effective tool as a leader.
Yeah, we had an intern at American Family right around the time when I became CEO, so 2011, 2012. And I was having lunch with this intern, we were talking about social. So LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, blogging, and this intern asked if he could help me dominate one of those social media outlets. And I kind of offhandedly said, sure. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. And then we started this relationship that I have really found valuable, and I've had this ongoing throughout my tenure as CEO, and that's this reverse mentoring, which is a mentoring role where you traditionally think of the CEO as mentoring other people, where it's actually other people mentoring the CEO in areas where the CEO is deficient. So over the years, I've had an intern and people reverse mentor with me around social. So Twitter in particular, but many other things as well, blogging and how we communicate directly and indirectly in the organization. But I've also had reverse mentoring relationships around things like business development, around artificial intelligence and machine learning. These are all areas that were really not part of my background as I was growing up in the organization, but are really relevant and important now as we think about where the world's going, where our business is going, and the relationship that we have with our customers and with our workforce. So that one with social was important for me because I found it early on to be difficult to connect one-on-one with people, with the volume of people we had at the company. And we did a lot of town halls. We traveled around and we did a lot of that. But really, I found it hard to connect directly. We now use Twitter as that way to connect. We also have internal things within the organization where people can reach out and they can connect with me. But Twitter has been a way that it's allowed me to have a voice with customers, with the workforce, to engage, to have dialogue going on. And I know I've talked to a lot of CEOs who say, I just don't have time for that. You know, it takes so much time to be looking at it always. And I've actually found it over the years to be a time saver for me. I can pop things up quickly. I get my news there. I get my information. I connect with people, and then I'm off it, and I'm on to something else. So I think social is a way, as you think about the competencies and the skill sets that are going to be needed for future CEOs, for future leaders of organizations. I think being very adept at social, knowing the types of things to say, the types of things to engage in, and then those types of things that you really need to stay clear of that are divisive. I think if you can do it right, it becomes a great tool as a leader and as a person who's managing individuals, a workforce, and a way to engage with people as well.
Where do you find inspiration?
Well, I have a lot of relationships with people, and it's really all the relationships that I have where I find the inspiration. I have a group of folks that I call my personal board of directors. This is a group of, I don't know, over the years it's been anywhere between maybe 4, 5, 6 people, and these are people who I have a relationship with, who are important to me in my life, and who will tell me like it is. And I might be CEO of a company, but these are people who will tell me if they think I'm really off on an idea or topic or whatever. And I find inspiration from people who are like that, who push back, help plant the seeds in my mind for ideas that can actually come out in the organization. So I'd say this personal board of directors. I mean, my family, obviously, my kids are a huge inspiration for me. I was talking to my youngest son the other day about success, and it is about having success in your career, but it's so much more than that. It's about having time for your kids. It's taking time for your kids and your spouse or your partner. It's about your faith, your relationship with a higher being. I believe in that as well. And so I think, and then how that wraps together is I've always been an avid reader, so I'm curious and I'm continually trying to better myself and learn new things and learn new ideas. And I think through all of that, through all of those different avenues, I'd say I get plenty of inspiration.
Who's your favorite author?
Well, I like Malcolm Gladwell a ton. Peter Diamandis. I don't know if you've read the book Abundance, but I've found Peter Diamandis with Bold, with Abundance to be a very forward-thinking person. Malcolm Gladwell, Michael Lewis. You know, he's got a book out right now. I love the style that Michael Lewis has, and his new book about the pandemic is a really good read as well. So those are kind of business books. And then if I'm on a beach somewhere or leisure, Michael Connelly, you know, a good thriller by Michael Connelly is what I'm probably reading.
So you've touched on this just a little bit, but, you know, as a CEO who's working lots of hours and trying to make time for family and other things, how do you unwind? And what's your secret to work-life balance? Is there such a thing? Is there a secret? What's your opinion on that? And how can people best find that balance?
I haven't been able to find that, to be honest with you. And it's a topic that gets talked about a ton. It kind of makes it sound like it's some kind of a teeter-totter where you're trying to balance that thing in the middle. And I just have not been able to quite find that type of balance. I think there's probably people around me who look at my schedule, who look at how I've operated, and it would not be the way they could operate at all. And I understand that, and I respect that in people. But on the same hand, I think that it works for me. I've always been a person who rises early, who gets online early, who gets a lot of work done before, whether it's doing some working out at the gym or whatever, reading the Wall Street Journal, reading the New York Times, reading the Wisconsin State Journal, if possible before you get into the office. I think everybody has to find this kind of work-life synergy, I would call it. This area where you're comfortable with the amount of time that you're putting in and you're comfortable at home, and there's intersections there that happen where you can be with your spouse or your partner or your kids or your friends, and you can still be looking at a couple things on email or texts that might be coming through. And there may be times where you need to step away and handle something, but other times where you let it ride. And finding that synergy between not taking away too much from the family, but not taking away too much from the work as well, and figuring out a way where it really works together, I think is the key. I think it helps to have things like friendships at work, and I've been lucky to be able to work with some folks that I would say, as I'm now thinking about my retirement, you know, I will spend more time with certain people after I retire, because I've worked with them and I have a really good relationship with them. But I think I really think that it's individual. For anybody to say that it's a certain model, I think that kind of gets it wrong, that it's individual. It has to be comfortable for you, and it has to flex over time as well. Your work-life situation when you're 30 years old and you have 30, 40 years old and you have young kids, maybe a new house or whatever is very different than it is maybe when you're 55, 60 years old and kids are in college or moving on. And I think that's finding that synergy as you go through your career is important.
Many of our listeners are entrepreneurs or are just starting their own entity. What advice would you give to startups? And how do you feel that American Family is advocating for startups?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question because I think it gets to some of the things that maybe I've seen from some startups over the years, some pitfalls that I've witnessed from some startups. And I think there's, as I think of like the insurtech space or the fintech space, think about what's happened over the last few years in the startup space there. There's been some pitfalls that have happened. I think I was talking to somebody the other day about this very topic, and this woman is very involved in the startup space in Wisconsin. And she said, you know, one of the things that just drives her crazy is that as soon as a startup gets a little bit of success, they start to see some money flowing in. Raising money is less of a problem. She said they want to run out and they want to get an office. They want to get an administrative staff. You know, they want to start down this path of success maybe a little bit early. And I think that's I think if you can avoid doing that, if you can keep that early stage mindset longer, and I think that's probably wise. And it's also hard to do because as you start getting a little success, you want all the things that come with that. I think as startups start to mature, the allure around liquidity events or monetizing this gets very strong. And I think we've seen in the last couple years in InsurTech in particular that folks have tried to do that and it hasn't worked out very well. So when you go public, there's a lot of things that go into that. And when you go public, it doesn't alleviate all your problems. It actually brings on many, many more. It brings on potential regulatory interest. It brings on people thinking more short-term than long-term about your baby, about your startup. And so it's almost like the athlete that wants to go pro too early. It's like if you can stay in school and just gut it out, that there are better opportunities for success if you can do that. And I think that analogy works in the startup space as well. That if you can keep that mindset longer and avoid some of those pitfalls, I think you'd be better off. As far as American Family, you know, we've been supporting startups. We have a large venture fund that we're going to our board of directors in just a few weeks to add more to that fund because we've seen huge success. It gives us great reconnaissance in our sector, in the insurance sector, to understand what's going on. And it also has given us great returns because of the good work of the venture team that we have. So we've been around startups, early stage and later stages for over 10 years now, and it's providing good returns and good reconnaissance around what's available, what's going on in our industry, and where the innovation is really happening. I think there was a lot of concern early on that startups would totally disrupt companies, disrupt the industry completely. And I think there's a realization now that whether it's insurtech or fintech, that there's applications of startups and things that are going on in startups right now that actually fold into mainstream companies very well. And so I think there's less reluctance around getting startups in the four walls of large companies now because of that.
As you approach retirement, I can only imagine that there's a tremendous amount of reflection that's happening. Can you talk about some of the things that you're the most proud of? And if you had to pick, you know, two or three highlights from your career, what those are?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest one is seeing the transition of the leadership in the team that I had helping me and working with me over the last 10 years, and seeing that transition now to the next generation of leaders coming in. That has been just really satisfying over the last few years as we've been working on this. So that team transition, it's not CEO succession as much as it is team progression. So it's a whole host of people that have helped me that are starting to retire now. And it's a whole new crop of people that are coming in that are going to be the people who are going to be helping Bill Westray. And this is a very diverse group of people. There's a lot of women. There's black and brown faces. There's sexual orientation differences. And so it's really great to see that move in a positive direction, I think. And very excited for the next years with American Family. You know, from a raw business standpoint, I've been very proud of the fact that we've positioned the organization very differently today than it was 10 years ago. 10 years ago, we were an exclusive agency insurance company operating in 19 states. Today, we have direct companies. We have companies that distribute through partners. We are not only national, but through our reinsurance arm, we are global. We have a lot of smaller operating companies within the four walls that are doing innovation work, startup work. And so, you know, seeing the business transform into something that's much more durable for the future, I think, than what we had 10 years ago has been really, really satisfying as well.
So what's next? Will you retire and travel and read books on a beach somewhere, or do you have some plans? What's next for Jack?
You know, I don't have a lot of huge plans. We're taking some time after the end of this year to kind of think about it a little bit. I've been approached by a few organizations to get involved with them, and I've kind of done a little bit of a stiff arm to just not get too plugged in too quickly, but to think about what is next for us. And I have a granddaughter now who's just awesome, and so the plan is to spend some time there as well. And but I do think that I have a lot of passion around certain things, and I think there's something else out there for me. I'm just kind of thinking through that a little bit, and I'll spend some time in January and February with Sarah talking about kind of where we're headed next.
Well, it's been such a pleasure having you here today.
Well, thank you.
Your story is very inspiring. You've done such amazing work. Thank you so much for everything that you've done for Starting Block, for American Family, for the state of Wisconsin. We appreciate you, and we see all of that good work. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here, and I appreciate you having me on your podcast.
If you haven't checked out Jack's blog about leadership, culture, and innovation, I encourage you to do so at jacksellswadel.com. For more information about American Family and their supportive communities, check out amfam.com/makingadifference or amfaminstitute.com. Thanks for listening. That's it for today. Thank you for listening to the Innovate 608 podcast. What's the most innovative thing you've done this week? Record a message all about your innovation and send it to us in an email at innovate608@startingblockmadison.org. Be sure to check out the Starting Block Madison Facebook page for video clips and episode outtakes. Remember, innovators, do one thing every day that is slightly outside of your comfort zone. That's where the magic happens. Thanks so much to the American Family Insurance Institute for Corporate and Social Impact for sponsoring this episode. See you next time.